This Sunday, 100 years ago, November 11, 1918, was the day that the cannons, the machine guns, the tanks fell silent on the Western Front. It's known as Armistice Day. It's known as Remembrance Day. And to talk about the Western Front campaign and the significance of that date, I caught up a little earlier with Matt McLaughlin, who's a battlefield historian. In fact, Matt will be there on the Western Front for the 100th anniversary coming up. And I asked as first question, with 45,000 Australian soldiers killed on the Western Front, how do we begin to understand the individual stories?
I think the scale of the loss during the First World War is the thing that we can't understand today. Today, when we lose a soldier, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for his family. It's a tragedy for his community and for the Defence Force. So you multiply that by 45,000 on the Western Front and 61,000 across the whole First World War. And you just start to see the, as you say, the inconceivable scale of grief that engulfed Australia. And you raise a really good point that it's important that in that vast number, that the huge figures, that we start to drill down. We can't think of those people as individuals when we talk about 45,000. So we do have to find out their individual stories. And I say to people, just read, you know, find out your family history, jump on the web. There's so many good online resources these days. Go old school and look in it, read a history book, but just delve into their stories. These were not 45,000 robots. These were 45,000 individuals, and they all left behind families and jobs and lives that they never came back to. So it doesn't quite answer your question because there really is no way to do this in any conceivable way. But I encourage people to delve into these stories and to read more about these individuals and to think of them as individuals.
I'd imagine the way that has been very helpful for you to start to understand these individuals is through letters. Tell us about some of the letters that you have encountered and those that stick most saliently in your own mind.
Yeah, personal accounts are always a wonderful way to bring these men to life because, as we said before, if you think of them just as numbers or as just part of a big army, you don't get the real story. And so I love reading personal accounts of what the soldiers have been through. And on the wall in my office where I work every day, there's a series of postcards that I've got framed which touch me every time I read them. And they were from a soldier who, writing to his much younger brother, his teenage brother, and he was off fighting in France in 1918, and just writing about the mundane things of life, because that's what we've got to remember. Being in the army a lot of the time is very mundane. It's not always charging with your bayonet across no man's land. And he's just writing about the French people and the historic buildings that he's visited and this whole experience that was quite novel for an Australian. And the sad undertone of that is that only a couple of weeks after he sent the final postcard, he was killed in action in one of these great battles and is now buried in France. So it's stories like that that really touch me. Probably one that affected me more than any other is a letter I have, which is from a father writing to his young children, his two or three children, who are obviously in care while he's away at the war. Perhaps their mother has passed away and they're being looked after by a relative or in foster care. And he's writing to them saying, please be brave. This is not what any of us want. But as soon as I get back, I'll build a better life for us. And I can't wait to see you all. And then accompanying that letter is a telegram from a minister saying, please be very careful how you tell the children, but he's been killed in action. So the thing about it is these are stories that just get repeated thousands and thousands and thousands of times. They're just horrific.
From 45 to just two stories and suddenly my hairs are rising and I just feel completely overwhelmed. How do you, as an historian and taking tours, writing books, maintain your own optimism as a chronicler of these events?
That's a great question. I mean, I think when you stand in one of these cemeteries, it's what I like to do is I like to bring to life the history by walking the ground. That's what I do. And when you stand in these cemeteries and you see these thousands of headstones with inscriptions from families back in Australia who never got to visit these graves, you don't feel optimistic. You feel just this heavy weight of sadness. And it's about learning those lessons of history. You can't understand what they went through. You can't find any real way to justify their sacrifice or to make that apply to your life, but you have to try. You have to look at all this and say, firstly, you have to remember them as individuals. You have to remember what they did. You have to learn as much as you can about them. And you have to understand what it means to Australia today that this is a sacrifice that occurred not that long ago and is still resonating today.
Let's touch on the actual day, the day of armistice, November 11, 1918. It's 100 years since that momentous occasion. The cannons, the guns, the tanks fell silent. How did the men react? Tell us about that day itself.
Well, it was a strange day all round because it wasn't a surprise to anyone. The Germans and the Allies had been negotiating for many weeks by this point, by the time the fighting stopped. And it was this really strange paradox that you had politicians sitting in a room talking about the terms that would end the war and very mundane things about land and rights and laws that would apply when the war was over. But on the front line, you had the soldiers fighting and dying as much as they had for the previous 4 years. And so it was this really weird situation that while the politicians bickered about the best way to end the war, thousands and thousands and thousands of men were dying in the front line. So it wasn't a surprise to anyone when the war ended. Everyone knew the Germans were soundly defeated and it was just a question of when the war would end. But there was this real feeling amongst the men at the front, will this ever end? I can't believe I'm still fighting after all these years. And there was this incredible fear that they would get killed before the end came upon them. So when that announcement came that, and it was made the day before, on the 10th, they made the announcement that the fighting will finish tomorrow morning at 11 a.m, there was just joy across the lines, but also this incredible fear, this incredible tension. What if it happens today on the last day? And sadly, for literally hundreds of men, they did die on the last day of fighting. So just awful.
Yeah. And when you say jubilation, when you say there was that joy and relief, I'm presuming that was on both sides of the battle line.
It was, but it was very different, the end of the war. Everyone was obviously happy to go home. But also, the thing we have to understand about this is men fighting, especially in the scale of the First World War, they're all individuals. So some men reported that they were overjoyed and singing and dancing and stealing wine and getting drunk. Other people felt this sense of just loss and emptiness and what do I do now with my life? And for the Germans, it was a very different story. Germany was basically, economically, had been totally destroyed by blockades and years of war. There was a lot of poverty at home in Germany. Their families were struggling with unemployment, with illness, and the soldiers themselves on the front line were really struggling. And Germany was in a very bad way. And so there was a great fear amongst the Germans of what are we going home to? And we can see that in what happened between the wars, the lead up to the Second World War, the rise of the Nazis in Germany, that there was this collective feeling of what's gone wrong and what can we do about it. And so I think for both sides, there was jubilation on the Allied side that we defeated the Germans and won this great victory. And there was a great sense of unease, excuse me, amongst the Germans about what are we going home to.
You're with David Astell on ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria, and I'm chatting with Matt McLaughlin, who's a battlefield historian. And of course, November 11, 1918, 100 years since the armistice was announced. Matt, how closely in your own historical archiving and research have you worked with the German people and the German historians?
I try to as much as I possibly can, but it's quite difficult because a lot of the German records were destroyed in the Second World War. The German records were written in High German. It's called the old type of German, which is difficult to read today. Mm-hmm. And so it has been difficult to wade through those archives. But it's great to see that there's German historians now who are doing some absolutely brilliant work on delving into those archives and telling those German stories, because we have overlooked them for too long. And I think the other problem from the German side is that the Second World War has just coloured this history in such a strong way. And there's a great sense of shame to do with the Second World War and the Holocaust. And the whole, from a German perspective, the First and the Second World Wars have really merged together. So it's often difficult to separate those various components of both wars. But it's great to see that there's several German historians now doing wonderful work and writing about it in English as well as in German.
100 years since armistice, 100 years since November 11, 1918. How has history changed, our own understanding of history changed, given that more and more evidence, more and more resources are being discovered in the meantime?
Well, like every part of history, it's an evolving story. We think of history as this static event that occurred a long time ago, and in some respects that's true. But as we learn more about it, as we take a greater interest in it, more parts of the story are revealing themselves. So there's been an ongoing argument for several decades about, was Germany actually defeated during the First World War? The Nazis, when they came to power, had this propaganda line that Germany had been stabbed in the back by the forces at home. And historians have debated for many decades now about whether that was actually the case. And I find that really exciting, that we can look back on something we think is fixed. We think that history is locked in time and is not going to change. But our interpretations of it can change. And by studying it and learning more about it and asking challenging questions, we learn a lot more about these events that we think are quite simple. We find out they're actually very, very complicated. And that's occurred on both sides. There's been questions about the way Germany was defeated during the war and what was the level of German defeat. But there's also been a really ongoing debate about the efficiency of the British generals. There's this whole concept that the British generals were all bunglers and sent thousands of men off to their death and were incapable of adapting to modern technology. And there's a really interesting and a really spirited debate that's going on now to redress that, to say, well, that probably wasn't the case, and that's probably unfair to the British. And for every Australian that was sent to his death by a British general, there was probably 5 or 6 or 10 British soldiers. And I think it's really important to keep asking these questions, to challenge these ideas. And the more we learn about it and the more we commemorate special dates like Remembrance Day this year, the more that we learn about these stories and the more complete picture we have of this history.
Talking about recent stories or recent developments since those momentous days, that includes the discovery of the Flanders Five, which is not an Enid Blyton novel, but those five fallen soldiers in Flanders. You were part of that documentary in 2009. What did we learn from these five fallen men?
That was a really great achievement by the people that were involved. And I should say that my role in it was merely to make a documentary about it. Mm. I was there and I simply followed their stories. The hard work that was done with those Australian soldiers was done by other much more clever people than me. But what had happened was they'd found five bodies and for the first time DNA tested them and were able to identify three of the five, which was absolutely remarkable. And it really changed the way we look at our war dead. It changed our attitude to the missing soldiers. It changed our attitude to the way we use technology to unravel the past. And I was really proud that everyone involved in that whole process, more than 10 years ago now, was able to get such great success. And by identifying three of those five soldiers, it created this wonderful precedent that we've applied several times since to identify Australian soldiers. So most famously, at Fromelles, 6 or 7 years ago, when they uncovered 250 Australian soldiers in a mass grave, they DNA tested the whole lot of them. And since then, I think the numbers are up to about 130 or maybe even more of those soldiers that have now been positively identified and buried under a headstone with their name on it. So I think it's wonderful that the present and in some ways the future, these new technologies are coming together to unravel these chapters of the past.
It is called Remembrance Day. And the next generation of children are reminded that these were great sacrifices that were made a century ago. But if we had to distill it into something that the children of Australia, the children of tomorrow, are best to remember, what do you think it would be?
It's very interesting. I think we are. There's a challenge ahead of us now when it comes to the remembrance of our war dead and our military history, because young people don't have a direct connection with these wars anymore. My generation, my parents were the Vietnam era, and so I had a direct connection through my grandparents with the Second World War, my great-grandparents with the First World War. But I think really my generation is the last generation that will have that direct connection. And from now on, it's going to become much more of a theory than a reality for young people. So we do have to try very, very hard to find a way to keep young people engaged. We're very lucky in Australia that young people have always engaged very strongly with our Anzac history, but we have to find a way to keep them engaged in the future. And it is a challenge to do that. I know that institutions like the Australian War Memorial are constantly looking at ways of evolving the message that they send to young people and trying to keep it relevant. But the simple answer is, you've got to remember something greater than yourself. That's what service is all about. That's what going off and fighting in a war and unfortunately for people, dying in a war is all about. It's something greater than yourself. And I think in our daily lives, we're not called on very often to do something like that. We don't have to make decisions that are bigger than us. Most of our lives just revolve around doing what we want to do and supporting the people around us. And I think that's the message we have to get through to young people, that this idea of sacrifice, this idea of remembrance is about something much larger than yourself. And fortunately, it's only during those times of war that gets tested. But we have to find creative ways of giving that message to young people so that when they stand at the Australian War Memorial and they read those 100,000 names on the Roll of Honour, that they understand what that means, that each of these was a person who left behind a family. And it's not just a concept. This is a reality for these people. There was a lot of grief. There was a lot of sadness collectively in Australia. And we've got to help young people to understand that this was a worthwhile sacrifice and it is about doing something much larger than just yourself.
Well, Remembrance Day is a sacred date, and it's your stories and your histories that go towards helping us recognise and remember and respect those that have fallen. I really appreciate your time, Matt. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Love to be here.
Matt McLaughlin, who is a battlefield historian.